Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
My Weird Prompts is an AI-generated podcast produced by Daniel Rosehill, a verified human with documentation to prove it. While every effort is made to ensure our AI hosts draw from credible sources and run on cutting-edge models, they do occasionally make things up with alarming confidence. As with everything in life, and especially this podcast, treat all claims as spurious until confirmed to be not. Daniel, Herman and Korn accept no responsibility for any decisions made based on the confident ramblings of our artificial presenters. Now, today's episode.
Hi there, Herman and Korn. So I asked you guys a question about polymedication and my personal feelings about that, being a bit uncomfortable taking many different prescription medications, and particularly as an asthmatic, what sort of prompted the question for me and was, should I go back on Singular? And I wasn't asking you for your medical advice. I don't do that, and I caution anyone else against doing that, but I was just using it as a jumping off point to ask you about your thoughts on polymedication and how, really in the spirit of this podcast, which is asking the kind of curious questions that I have floating in the back of my mind, how many meds can you actually be on? Like, is there a limit besides interactions and stuff like that? The episode is generating and I'm looking forward to listening to it. But I thought it would be a good jumping off point for another episode. I mentioned that my asthma is not the best today. For the first time in a while, it's usually pretty well controlled, and I'm have this condition long enough that I can pretty much sort of pinpoint usually specific exposures. And in this case, it was secondhand smoke. And I was in somebody's house for a while that they smoke indoors a lot. I know, you know, I felt okay, but then when I sort of, it just kind of kicks in like an hour later, I kind of feel that tightness in my chest. And it's a real bummer. So having asthma, and this is just kind of, it's probably the most decisive trigger for me, is secondhand smoke, tobacco smoke. It always amazes me, like even fairly short exposures to a really smoky environment will trigger it for me. So it's an issue that I have kind of a personal stake in. I enjoy going to bars, haven't had much of a chance since our dear son Ezra was born, but certainly used to enjoy spending time in pubs. And in Israel, we have, I would say, a very regressive secondhand smoke law, by which I mean, I live in Jerusalem, as you know, and there are a number of bars that I would love to go to. They're kind of cool bars, but I can't because they tolerate indoor smoking. Now, it's technically illegal, but it's quite widespread that there are bars where it's, you know, indoor smoking is okay and it's fine and whatever. Look, I just avoid those places because I can't really enjoy them. But what I sort of wanted to talk about is this whole question of secondhand smoke exposure and policies around it, because I grew up actually in Ireland. And one thing that Ireland did very, very well is that it really took the lead in secondhand smoke, denormalizing it, I would say. So I can remember growing up, there was a point where I couldn't go to bars. I mean, children don't go to bars, but I couldn't even like stand in a bar, put it like that. And at some point, Ireland passed secondhand smoke legislation that I think was at the time very, very forward-thinking. And when I came to Israel, if I can draw a comparison, I would say that it's much, much poorer here in terms of the enforcement. I mentioned bars, but you'll also find just kind of random shops like kiosks that like they're smoky, and you might have to, I used to have to go to pick up deliveries from the post in a certain pickup location, and I had to try to like get it rerouted because it was like walking into a den of smoke, and I had to be in there for like an hour. So I know that people might say that I don't agree that, you know, we should have maybe a such a restrictive law that people who smoke and enjoy smoking don't have their spaces where they can do that. But I do think there is an important reason for secondhand smoke policies. One place I've seen it, and this drives me nuts, is hospitals. In hospitals in Israel, it's quite the last time I was in one, when our son was born, there was like a bunch of doctors gathered outside smoking like chimneys. And again, that's just something that kind of strikes me. It's kind of funny, right? It's so perverse that like you go to a hospital to get healthier, and then you sort of are dodging secondhand smoke. But that's another place where I see it quite a bit. And again, it's like there's signs up saying don't do it, but and signs are kind of useless if they're not enforced. So I'd love to open up that question about secondhand smoke policy around the world in different governments, different countries, how we're looking in 2025. I know that in Israel, the smoking rate is paradoxical, that in the sense that, if I'm not mistaken, the last time I looked at data, it's actually going up among the youth, the young people, which is usually not the trend we see. And I certainly see that, you know, just looking around with my eyes, I see quite a number of, a surprising amount of young people who are, you know, taking up cigarette smoking. So what would you say if you were kind of to point to the state of secondhand smoke policy in 2025? What countries are more, let's say, maybe have more advanced regimes? And what are the nuances in terms of the policies between different countries? Thanks, Herman and Corin. Looking forward, as always, to hearing your response.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corn, and I am joined as always by my brother,
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. Today we are diving into a topic that hits pretty close to home, literally. Our housemate Daniel sent us a voice note about something that has been bothering him quite a bit lately, especially as someone who lives with asthma.
Yeah, Daniel was telling us about how he has been struggling with secondhand smoke exposure here in Jerusalem. It is one of those things you do not really think about until you cannot breathe, you know? It is especially interesting because Daniel grew up in Ireland, which apparently has a totally different vibe when it comes to smoking laws compared to what we see here in Israel.
It is a fascinating study in how policy and culture collide. And honestly, it is a perfect time to talk about this, because here at the end of 25, the global landscape for tobacco control has shifted in some pretty radical ways. As a donkey who spends way too much time reading public health journals, I can tell you that the gap between the leaders and the laggards is wider than ever.
I mean, I am just a simple sloth who likes fresh air, but even I have noticed that some places feel, I do not know, cleaner than others. But before we get into the heavy policy stuff, can we just talk about what secondhand smoke actually is? I mean, we all know it is the smoke from the end of the cigarette. But why is it so much worse for people like Daniel?
That is a great starting point, Corn. So, there are actually two types of tobacco smoke that non-smokers get exposed to. There is sidestream smoke, which comes directly from the burning end of the cigarette, and mainstream smoke, which is what the smoker exhales. The crazy thing is that sidestream smoke actually has higher concentrations of cancer, causing agents and toxins than the smoke the smoker inhales.
Wait, really? How does that work?
Well, when a smoker inhales, the tobacco burns at a higher temperature, which actually destroys some of the toxins. But when the cigarette is just sitting there in an ashtray, it burns at a lower temperature, which results in a dirtier, more toxic chemical cocktail. For someone with asthma, those particles are like tiny jagged rocks hitting their airways. It causes immediate inflammation, which is why Daniel mentioned that tightness in his chest starting up even an hour after he leaves a smoky environment.
That sounds miserable. And Daniel mentioned that globally, this is a massive issue. I saw a report recently saying that children lose over 8 million days of healthy life every single year just because of secondhand smoke. 8 million.
Exactly. The actual figure from research presented earlier this year in 25 is 8.45 million days of healthy life lost annually for children. It is a staggering number. And that is why we are seeing this massive push for stricter laws. But as Daniel pointed out, having a law on the books and actually making people follow it are two very different things.
Right, the enforcement gap.
He mentioned Ireland versus Israel. I remember hearing that Ireland was actually one of the first places to do a full indoor smoking ban, like, a long time ago.
You are spot on. Ireland was a global pioneer. They implemented the first national workplace smoking ban in 2004. It was revolutionary at the time. People thought the pubs would go out of business, that there would be riots in the streets. But instead, it became a massive success. Public support actually grew after it was implemented because people realized how much nicer it was to go home without their clothes smelling like an old campfire.
And here in Israel, it feels different. I mean, I go to some bars in Jerusalem, and it is like walking into a fog bank. There are signs that say no smoking, but everyone has a cigarette in their hand, and the bartenders just shrug.
That is the core of Daniel's frustration. In Israel, the legislation is actually quite robust on paper. We have laws banning smoking in public places, including bars, restaurants, and even within 10 meters of hospital entrances. But the enforcement is, well, it is spotty at best. In many places, it is socially acceptable to just ignore the law, and the local authorities do not always make it a priority to issue fines.
It is weird because Israel is so advanced in so many other ways. But with smoking, it feels like we are stuck in the 1980s. Daniel even mentioned seeing doctors smoking right outside the hospital doors when his son was born. That feels like some kind of dark irony.
It is incredibly perverse. And it is not just a feeling, Korn. The data from late 24 and 25 shows that while smoking rates are dropping in many Western countries, they have been stubbornly high or even rising among certain groups in Israel, particularly young people. When the culture does not stigmatize public smoking, the laws do not carry much weight.
So if Ireland is the gold standard for enforcement and Israel is struggling, what does the rest of the world look like right now? Are there countries that are going even further than Ireland did?
Oh, absolutely. 25 has been a massive year for what people are calling the end game strategies. We are moving past just banning smoking in bars. We are now seeing bans in outdoor spaces. France has really taken the lead on this recently.
France. I always think of France as the place where everyone is sitting at a cafe with a cigarette and a baguette.
That was the old stereotype. But as of July 1st, 25, France implemented some of the strictest outdoor smoking bans in the world. They have banned smoking in all outdoor areas frequented by children. We are talking parks, public gardens, beaches, and even bus stops. If there is a chance a kid is there, you cannot light up.
That is a huge shift. I bet the beaches are a lot nicer without cigarette butts in the sand.
It makes a massive difference for the environment, too, but the primary goal is denormalizing the behavior. If kids never see people smoking in public, they are much less likely to start. It is all about changing the social fabric.
You mentioned endgame strategies. That sounds like something out of a superhero movie. What does that actually mean in the world of tobacco policy?
It refers to policies designed to eventually eliminate tobacco use entirely. The most famous example right now is the Maldives. This year, they introduced a generational tobacco ban.
A generational ban? How does that work? Do they just ban it for everyone born after a certain year?
Exactly. It is often called a smoke-free generation law. Basically, they set a date, and anyone born after that date can never legally be sold tobacco products for their entire lives. So, the legal smoking age effectively goes up by 1 year every single year. In theory, it means that tobacco eventually just ages out of the population.
That is wild. It is like a slow-motion prohibition. Does it actually work?
Well, we are in the early stages of seeing the results. New Zealand tried something similar before a change in government rolled it back, but the Maldives is pushing forward. Other countries are watching very closely. The idea is to stop the supply chain for new smokers while still allowing current adult smokers to make their own choices, though with more and more restrictions on where they can actually do it.
It is interesting that the focus is shifting to the next generation. It makes sense, though. If you can stop the habit before it starts, you solve the secondhand smoke problem for everyone eventually. But what about right now for people like Daniel? Is there any hope for better enforcement in places that already have the laws?
That is the big question. Some countries are using technology to help. There are apps now in parts of the European Union where citizens can report smoking violations in real time, and it triggers an automatic notification to the business owner or even a local inspector. It is a bit controversial because it feels a little like snitching, but for someone with a health condition, it is a matter of safety.
I can see that. If I could not breathe because someone was breaking the law next to me, I would probably want a way to report it too.
It is all about who the law is protecting. For a long time, the conversation was about the smoker's right to smoke. Now, the conversation has shifted entirely to the non-smoker's right to breathe clean air. It is a fundamental shift in how we view public space.
Let's take a quick break for our sponsors.
Are you tired of the air around you being just plain? Do you wish you could carry a piece of the Industrial Revolution wherever you go? Introducing the Smog-O-Matic 5000. This revolutionary wearable device takes perfectly clean air and enriches it with a proprietary blend of charcoal dust, aged newsprint scent, and a hint of mysterious chemical runoff. Why breathe like a forest-dwelling hermit when you can breathe like you are standing behind a bus in 1972? The Smog-O-Matic 5000 is sleek, heavy, and requires 16 AA batteries an hour. It is the perfect gift for the person who has everything but wants a persistent cough. Larry, buy now.
All right, thanks, Larry. I think I will stick to the fresh air, personally. Anyway, Korn, where were we?
We were talking about the shift in rights, the right to breathe versus the right to smoke. It seems like the world is really moving toward the breathers. But I'm curious about the nuances. Daniel mentioned that even in Ireland, things have evolved. It is not just about bars anymore, right?
Right. In 25, we are seeing a lot of focus on what is called third-hand smoke. This is the residue that sticks to walls, carpets, and clothes long after the cigarette is put out. Even if no one is smoking in a room right now, if they smoked there an hour ago, there are still toxins being off-gassed into the air.
Wait, so even if the room smells fine, there could still be stuff in the air?
Exactly. And for asthmatics or young children crawling on carpets, that is a real health risk. That is why we are seeing more policies around smoke-free housing. In some parts of the United States and Canada, entire apartment buildings are now required to be smoke-free, including inside the private units.
That feels like it would be hard to enforce. How do they know if you are smoking in your own living room?
Usually it is through lease agreements and neighbor complaints. But the goal is to protect the people in the next apartment over. Because, as we know, smoke travels through vents, electrical outlets, and floorboards. If you live in a multi-unit building, your neighbor's secondhand smoke is often your secondhand smoke.
That is a really good point. I never thought about it coming through the walls. It makes the Israel situation feel even more urgent, especially in older buildings in Jerusalem where everything is so close together.
It really is. And Daniel's point about the post office or small kiosks is another great example of the enforcement gap. In many countries, those would be considered high priority areas for enforcement because everyone has to go to the post office. You cannot just choose to avoid it like you can a bar. When public services are smoky, it is a form of exclusion for people with respiratory issues.
So, if we look at the global map in late 25, who are the leaders right now? If someone like Daniel wanted to move somewhere where he would never have to worry about a cigarette again, where would he go?
Well, Ireland is still near the top because their compliance is so high. But Australia and Singapore are also incredible leaders. Singapore has used a combination of very high taxes, massive public education campaigns, and incredibly strict enforcement. They even use thermal cameras in some areas to detect the heat from a cigarette in a non-smoking zone.
Thermal cameras? Man, they are not messing around.
Not at all. And then you have countries like Bhutan, which famously banned the sale and production of tobacco entirely for a long time, though they have moved toward more of a high-tax, restricted access model recently. But if you want the most advanced regime in 25, you really have to look at France's new outdoor laws. They are setting the pace for the rest of Europe.
It is funny how things change. France used to be the smoker's paradise, and now they are the ones telling people they cannot smoke at the bus stop. It gives me hope that maybe Israel could change too.
It usually starts with a tipping point in public opinion. In Ireland, the tipping point was the health of the bar workers. People realized it was not fair to force someone to work in a toxic environment just to earn a paycheck. In Israel, we might need a similar shift in focus, maybe focusing on the health of children or the rights of people with chronic conditions like asthma.
Daniel mentioned that he feels like he just has to avoid certain places. That feels like a loss for the community. If a whole group of people cannot go to the cool bars or the local shops because of smoke, the community is smaller than it should be.
That is exactly the right way to look at it. It is an accessibility issue. We talk a lot about ramps for wheelchairs or Braille for the blind, but clean air is an accessibility requirement for millions of people with asthma, COPD, or heart conditions. When we allow public smoking, we are effectively putting up a no-entry sign for those people.
So, what are the practical takeaways for our listeners? If you are in a place with bad enforcement like Israel, or even if you are in a place with good laws, what can you actually do?
First, it is about knowing your rights. Even in Israel, the law is on your side. You have the right to ask a business owner to enforce the no-smoking rule. Often, they do not do it because they do not want the confrontation, but if enough customers speak up, the math changes for them. They realize they are losing more business from the non-smokers than they are from the smokers.
And what about on a bigger scale?
Advocacy is huge. Supporting organizations that push for better enforcement and stricter outdoor laws. And for the smokers out there, it is about being mindful of where that smoke goes. It does not just disappear when you blow it into the wind. It lingers on your clothes, it drifts into windows, and for someone like Daniel, it can ruin their whole day or even send them to the hospital.
It is about that mutual respect, right? We all live in this house together. We all live in this city together. We have to look out for each other.
Exactly. And the good news is that the global trend is very clearly moving towards smoke-free environments. Even the countries that are lagging behind are feeling the pressure. The economic cost of tobacco-related illness is just too high for governments to ignore forever. Between the lost productivity and the healthcare costs, tobacco is a massive drain on the system.
I hope Daniel's lungs get a break soon. It sounds like he has a good perspective on it, though comparing his two homes and seeing what is possible. It is not like this is an unsolvable problem. Ireland proved that you can change a culture in a single generation.
They really did. And with the new generational ban starting up in 25, we might be looking at a future where our kids look back at the idea of smoking in a bar the same way we look back at people throwing trash out of their car windows. It will just seem gross and outdated.
I'm looking forward to that day. I like my air, like I like my naps long, deep, and uninterrupted by coughing fits.
Well said, brother. I think we have covered a lot of ground today. From the chemistry of sidestream smoke, to the generational bans in the Maldives and the new outdoor restrictions in France. It is a complex issue, but the direction of travel is clear.
Definitely. Thanks to Daniel for sending in such a personal and important topic. It really made me think about the air I am breathing every day.
And thanks to everyone for listening. This has been a really deep dive into something that affects every single one of us, whether we realize it or not.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can find our contact form at myweirdprompts.com. We love hearing your thoughts and your own weird prompts. You can also find us on Spotify and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
We have an RSS feed on the website too, if you want to make sure you never miss an episode.
This has been My Weird Prompts. I am Korn.
And I am Herman Poppleberry.
Stay curious and keep breathing that fresh air. We will see you next time.
Hello. Goodbye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.